Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Authors on the Air. Welcome today. I'm Pam Stack, your host. I just want to remind you that if you're listening to us live, please go and click the follow button. Blog Talk Radio really likes that stuff. I don't particularly, you know, it doesn't matter to me, but I want you to follow us. And also, you can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, on all those other social media sites, including Pinterest. And please check out our webpage at authorsontheair.com. It changes almost every week. Okay, enough about that. Most important thing we're doing here today is we are talking to authors about their books. And I'm really very happy today to have with us a very special author who has quite a reputation for being a truly good psychological horror writer, which scares the crap out of me. So let's sit down and talk to Andrew E. Kaufman. Hi, Drew. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Pam. It's great to be here.
How's everything in your neck of the woods? You're on the other side of the earth from me.
Yeah, I just realized I just said morning, but it's really not morning for everybody else, although in my world it's usually morning all the time. So
there you go. You're A-OK. You're A-OK.
Yeah.
How's your day been going for you? Now, this is early, a little early for you, I guess, yeah? You're not a first crack, not a crack at the dawn kind of a guy?
No, I am not. I'm not a crack at the dawn. I've been noted not to be a morning person, but I've learned that I have to be since I started writing books. So.
There you go. How did you start writing books? That's a really good segue into the next part. How did you decide to write books? Because you were in television for a long time, weren't you?
Yeah, it's actually a long story. I've always loved to write, and I started out my career in television news as a writer and producer. And about 10 years into it, I realized that it wasn't my thing anymore. That writing truth wasn't as fun as writing fiction. And I used to get in trouble a lot when I would be writing a story, and I'd say to my producer, "Wouldn't it be really cool if Andrew, write the story?" I said, "I know, but wouldn't it be really cool?" "No, write the story." So I realized at that point I was probably knew where I was headed, and since I've always been a voracious reader of thrillers. Once I realized that it just wasn't for me anymore, I decided to start writing my first book. And at that point, it was whether I could write a book. I didn't know at that point. I just thought I'd give it a try. And as it turned out, I could write a book. I finished a book. So I felt really good about it. And then everything just kind of took off from there. It was one of those things where life just kind of pushes you where you need to go, you know.
That's interesting. I want to know what the title of your first book for our listeners is.
It was While the Savage Sleeps, which was I originally slated as a forensic paranormal thriller and eventually fell into the horror groove. That was the first one, and that was where I first started meeting my readers.
Now, did you enjoy reading the psychological thrillers yourself, or do you like all genres?
You know, I've always been, it's funny because I never intended to be a horror writer, you know, per se. It was just an idea that I had. And once that book became known as a horror, in the horror genre, I didn't really intend to stay there. My passion has always been for thrillers, especially psychological thrillers. So when I wrote my next book, I completely hopped into the genre that I really wanted to be in, which was thrillers, and wrote my second book. And that's when, you know, a majority of my readers came along, and where, you know, that book was my most successful book. And that's pretty much where I am now, where I want to stay. That's not to say I wouldn't write another horror novel. I would. But I think my love is really with psychological thrillers. That's pretty much where I found my place and what I enjoy.
Well, that's wonderful. It's nice to know your space in the world. How long have you been writing now as a published author? Because I know that, you know, you go most authors go back a long time. They go way back into their childhood when they're writing their little plays and their daydreams and everything else. And you mentioned, and every author I've ever spoken to has said that they have been voracious readers. So when did you write your first published book? How long ago? And tell me about what it was like to write While the Savage Sleeps and get it published. Tell me the whole experience. I want to know.
Well, I've always been a writer, and I always tell people I was a writer before I knew what the word meant, because when I was a little kid, I was publishing little magazines that nobody ever read, but I still published them myself. You know, I graded them myself. It was kind of
Absolutely.
A part of the one. But and I've always just loved to write. It was just, you know, it was very organic for me. And my first published work was actually in Chicken Soup for the Soul, the cancer book, where I kind of chronicled my experience. I was diagnosed with cancer several years back, and that was my first shout out to the world, you know, public shout out to the world was published, and that was right before While the Savage Sleeps came out. So then I wrote that, and that was writing While the Savage Sleeps was a experiment. I didn't know if I could write a book. I didn't know if I could. I didn't know if I could do this. You know, I'd never done it before, and
right.
It felt so. While it was happening, it was like the wheels began spinning. It felt so natural and so simple for me. Oh, no, I shouldn't say simple. It was never simple, but it felt so. I felt like I was in my zone, and
right.
Honestly, since then, it hasn't. It's just kept speeding up since then, so I know it was the right way to go.
I think that's terrific, and I did not know that about you, about Chicken Soup and all. Are you well?
Yes, I am. I'm
good.
June will be my fourth year in remission, so I'm very
congratulations.
Grateful for that.
And all positive energy into the universe for you, Drew.
Thank you.
And thank you for sharing that with us. That was something I did not know. So how long did it take you to write the book? And tell me what happened when you got accepted by your publisher. What was your reaction?
Well, what I'm finding is that each book gets a little bit easier in some ways, and in some ways not so easy, because I think it's in me to stretch myself every single time I write a book, and my goal is always to write a better one. So the skills are always improving, and some parts of it are easier, some parts are more of a challenge because I kind of raise the bar each time, you know. But the publishing deal actually was a part of a whirlwind that occurred in a very short period of time. When The Lion, the Lamb, the Hunted came out, it shot very quickly to being a bestseller. I think it was number 7 on Amazon's top 100. And as a result, there was a lot of exposure. Because I was an independent author at the time, I started getting a lot of attention from publishers, from movie studios, from agents asking, you know, if I was interested in kind of moving my career to the next level. And I signed on with, Scott Miller at Trident Media Group in New York, the literary agency. And from there, things just took off, and I had a lot of options at that point, but I ended up going with Amazon Publishing because that's really where I had my start, and that those were the people. I don't know if I've mentioned, but when I put While the Savage Sleeps out, I was rejected by everyone.
Really?
I must have sent everyone. I must have sent out hundreds of query letters, and I was basically told that this book would never sell and that it wasn't marketable. And I kept fighting and kept struggling because I believed in the book. You know, I knew I had something.
Right.
And
when
things took off, it was a feeling of validation for all my hard work, because suddenly a lot of people were interested in my stuff, and that was a great feeling, you know, to be
right.
recognized and have that validation. And also, it was a strong message that I tell writers every chance I get, is that don't give up, because if I had given up, I never would be where I am now. So the publishing deal was kind of a culmination of all that hard work, and it was validation, and it felt wonderful. And I chose Amazon because they were the ones who gave me my start. They were the ones who held the door open for me when everyone else wouldn't. So I felt it was a natural decision to stay with Amazon Publishing, and that was when I made the deal with Thomas and Mercer and 47 North, which is where I am at.
Well, you know, I hate to say you sound like an overnight success, because, you know, some authors are plugging away this all their life. And really, it took you a while to get this going. So it is a lesson learned and a message to aspiring authors as well. It never is as easy as it appears. Although it sounds like once you got your foot in the door, then away you went and it was gone.
Yeah,
I've got to skip around for just a minute and ask you a couple things. First of all, you are a prolific poster to your Facebook page, and you have a group of the zaniest fans and friends I have ever read, your Drew's Crew.
My peanut gallery,
they're really an amazing group of people. How did that come about? You interact with your fans and your friends quite a bit.
Yeah, I'm very, very active on Facebook. This is my portal. For me, it's my portal to my readers. It's how I communicate with them. It's convenient. It's effortless for me because I love my readers and I love talking to them. So I think people ask me a lot, you know, how I have gathered so many people, you know, so many dedicated people on Facebook. And the answer I give is that when you enjoy something, it's effortless and it's seamless and it's always successful, because this is something that I don't do, you know, because I have to promote my books, because I have to get the word out. It's never that kind of mindset that I have. This is something I genuinely enjoy every minute of.
You enjoy doing it.
And I mean, I love my readers. I'm grateful beyond measure to them. I know that what I have, where I've come to at this point, is, you know, a lot of it is because of them. So for me, it's simple, it's easy, you know, and I love talking to them.
You have a love fest with these people. I mean, I'm looking at some of the posts on your Facebook page, and it really is a love fest for them, which is great.
I know, it gets a little sticky sometimes on my part, because I get all gushy with them, because I just don't, you know, sometimes I'm just so grateful to them all the time, and it's so hard to, you know, I try not to sound all mushy, but sometimes I do, just because I'm so damn grateful to these people. They mean a lot to me, and the Peanut Drew's Crew, I guess, the Peanut Gallery was just a few people. You know, someone, we were talking, and you know, the threads kind of get a little long, and I have a couple of beloved fans that I have I don't like to call them fans; I like to call them readers, who were talking about how they're always thread napping me. You know, how they're always, because the threads could go on for like 100 comments sometimes,
right.
which I love.
I see that.
Yeah, I love that. But they started calling themselves, I think they first started calling themselves the Peanut Gallery. And from there it became Drew's Crew. I think it goes back and forth to the Peanuts now. I'm not sure what we call ourselves. But really,
both,
Drew's Crew, the Peanut Gallery, all that are just some of my favorite reader Facebook friends that were people that have become my friends on Facebook because of the books. And, you know, they're some of my most dedicated people. I love them.
That's great. I know that you have a very good friend in Jessica Park, and I'm just reading one of her posts. She said, you're being interviewed today, and so listen in. He's smart, charming, and funny. No, really, he is. He's also tagged on with psychosexual thriller, so that might get you interested. She's a funny lady, and I think that I have someone posting right now, Lucy Fleury, saying, you know, she loves you right back. That
she's one of my peanuts.
Oh, yeah, she's great. Lucy, yeah, she's a She's a great one. I love her. She's terrific.
I love her too.
As a matter of fact, some of your readers are how I found you.
I'm sorry?
So it's an some of your readers are how I found you. That we, I guess we had some crossover posting, and I said, well, who the heck is this Drew guy who all he wants to talk about is religious experience with dessert? So,
I have an obsession.
Much. you kind of have a little bit of a sweet tooth, yes?
Yeah, you see, the thing about this is that I'm very, I don't talk on Facebook directly about my books. I talk about my life experiences. That's, that's like everyone else does. This is not about screaming out, here's my book, because that never works. I talk about my life experiences. And so what you see on Facebook a lot of times are my my terrorist chocolate lab, Caleb, and my other three girls that are with him, and my obsession with chocolate, which rules my life, and which I'm powerless over.
You're held hostage by it, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm a slave to it. Chocolate is always. I really am.
And yet, you're not overweight, Drew. You're a sharp, good-looking man here. Do you have to run around the block three times before you indulge?
I noticed that the weight gain does tend to creep up when I'm writing books because I tend to do the hand-to-mouth thing a lot while I'm writing without realizing it. It's kind of like watching TV and eating potato chips, you know? It's like, oh, did I just finish that? Oh, is that gone? But I do try to keep it real. Moderation is the key. I don't exercise as much as I would like to, but I try to get on the treadmill when I can. And I just keep an eye on it. But chocolate is my weakness, and that's where I usually, that's usually the cause for any kind of increment in weight. But I've managed to keep it under control, thankfully.
Okay, and who is Turtle?
Turtle is my little Jack Russell.
Picture of you.
One of my readers calls it the Jack Russell terrorist. She's a
Jack Russell terrorist.
She's about 10 pounds of trouble, you know. But she's my adorable little Jack Russell Terrier, and she lives with two yellow labs and, of course, Caleb, the chocolate moose. So
you are a very pet-friendly. Oh, does
Pardon?
She?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Turtle rules the house. She's the boss. She just lets us all live there. So.
Oh, how nice of her. You are very partial to caps, I notice.
To who?
And caps. You wear a lot of caps, trucker caps, hats, baseball caps.
Oh, yeah, that's my uniform at home. That's called, you mean baseball hats, you mean?
Yeah, there are a couple of pictures that make you look like a trucker, I have to tell you. It's really bizarre.
I saw that comment once on my Facebook page, I think. Someone said something about that. Here's the thing about me is I live in the country and I have horses and I'm very much not the cleaned up version that people see on Facebook and on my photographs. I always say I clean up well, but when you see me at home, I'm not at all cleaned up and dressed up as that one photo I think you have on there. You saw me working on my books.
Right.
I'm very much, comfortable, and as an author, I have to clean up every once in a while for a picture.
There you go. Well, I just got a message from Jessica Park who says that you don't look like a trucker at all. So,
well, thank you, Jessica.
And
I really appreciate it.
I think she's going to give you a call later on and probably spin this whole show around. I'll lose control once again, like I always do. But that's okay.
Jessica is a very, 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 very good friend of mine. She's an amazing author. She's a New York Times bestselling author, and she recently came out to visit me. We had a blast. She's just a wonderful person. I adore her.
She said to tell you, Turtle is not a terrorist, by the way.
Okay, here's the thing about Turtle and Jessica. there was a love affair between Turtle and Jessica that occurred the second she came into my house, and Jessica was obsessed with Turtle, and Turtle was obsessed with Jessica, and once they met, it was all over. I mean, she was carrying that dog all around my house, and they were inseparable, you know.
So now nothing compares to Jessica.
No, I mean, when she left, Turtle went through a very long postpartum depression after they separated. And whenever there's a phone call, the first question is, how is Turtle? It's like, she's fine.
So she cares not for you, really. It's really Turtle she's calling upon.
She loves me, too. But Turtle
okay.
has found a special place in her heart. She was just in love with that dog. And Turtle has never been
the same. She said she's having T-shirts made that nothing compares to Jessica.
I know. Turtle, I told her Turtle has never been the same since she's left now. It's like, you know, the dog is just... The other day she was scratching on the guest room door thinking she was in there. It was really sad, but she came out of therapy. I'm going to have to start shipping her out for parental visits, I think, soon.
Visitation, exactly. There you go.
Yeah. It was a wonderful
time. I noticed that you were at Left Coast Crime.
Yes, I was.
You go to a lot of author, reader, and author conventions, do you? Or do you stick mainly on the West Coast where you are?
You know, in the past, I haven't been to a lot of them, only because, you know, at that stage in my career, it wasn't something that, it wasn't something I could really afford to do, you know, on a frequent basis. And what I'm finding is that as things have been picking up so much, I'm going to need to do a lot more of those. So I'm kind of, I went to Left Coast Crime 2 years ago in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and I had a blast there. And I've gone here and there. Mostly I've stuck on the West Coast just because it's convenient for me. But I'm probably going to be expanding a lot more this year as when the new book comes out.
Going to go to Thriller Fest at all?
You know, I've thought about that. It's possible. I thought about Thriller Fest.
It's going to be a good one.
About...
I'm going to broadcast live from there. I'd love to see you.
Oh. Yeah, and I think about BoucherCon. There's a lot of big events I probably... I'm going to need to attend and that I want to attend. So I'm looking to expand my schedule more as this as things pick up this year, you know, with a publisher.
I want to ask you a little bit more about, you know, your interaction when you go to these conferences. A lot of times is just with writers. They're strictly writer conferences. Would you prefer to go to one that was more reader-centric? Or do you get a lot of stuff out of your writer colleagues? You teach also. You're on panels all the time, I notice.
You know, yeah, you know, in the beginning it was mostly just writer conferences because I was at a stage where I wanted to, you know, learn my craft and improve on my craft. I went to several of those over, you know, the years before I was published. Now I'm focusing more on the reader conferences that are more oriented to readers because I'm in that kind of that phase right now where I'm spreading the word about my work. And Left Coast Crimes is a writer and reader kind of place where readers or authors gather to talk to readers. So those panels were, you know, pretty much for readers to come and watch and ask questions like that. I did the Southern California Writers Conference, which was more reader-oriented, and that was mainly – the purpose for that was mainly because I wanted to go there to encourage other writers to see that they can do what I've done, you know, with the, you know, that they can achieve what I have, even after all the adversity that I face. So I think I probably would do both. I want to talk to readers and writers. For readers, I want them to learn to meet me or for me to meet them. And for writers' conferences, I want to encourage every writer I can because I've been through the mill. You know, when it comes to becoming published, and I think I have a lot to offer in terms of encouragement, you know, and inspiration.
And you like sitting on the panels. You like doing this stuff.
Yeah. You know, for me, interacting with readers is not a job. It's what I enjoy. This is, you know, for me, doing this doesn't feel like work. In fact, really none of this feels like work. Writing books doesn't feel like work. You know, meeting my readers doesn't feel like work because this is what I love. This is my passion. And when you do what you know, when you follow your passion, do what you love, it almost feels effortless, you know. So meeting readers every chance I get is something I absolutely love.
I know, it's amazing when you find your niche, and there you are, and you're running with it. It is truly
amazing.
There's
nothing more gratifying than being able to make a living doing what you love. There's just no way to describe that.
Well, hold on a second now, because we have a caller. Hold on just a second.
Uh-oh.
Welcome. You're on Authors on the Air.
Andrew, it's your biggest fan.
Jessica.
And who is your biggest fan? Listeners, this is Jessica Park, the best-selling author. Welcome, Jessica. I'm so glad you
Thank
called
you.
In.
Thank you. I'm also Turtle's
Jessica.
Biggest fan, too, but I think Andrew already knows
Turtle's
that.
Turtle's biggest fan. Yeah.
This is so true.
So what can you tell us about Drew?
My own turtle. I now have my own little dog.
Yes, Jessica, as soon as she got home, she said she was never a small dog person, and as soon as she got home the next day, she went out and got a little dog.
I just want
to
be like you, Andrew.
I want to be you.
I want to be you. I'm trying to do everything Andrew would do.
God, what would Andrew do? God, you don't want to do that.
Yeah, I can tell. This is a mistake on my part. Let me just hang up and listen, okay?
Yeah, you're totally lost control of this interview, Pam.
I'm telling you, someone's hijacked it. So, Jessica, here's tell us about Andrew that Andrew won't tell us about himself. What do we need to know about this gentleman?
Well, professionally or personally?
Well, I don't care. Whatever he's paid you to say is fine with me.
I will tell you, Andrew. Here's one thing, though. Professionally speaking, I won't violate our friendship trust. Personally speaking, with his writing, Andrew is such a gifted writer. I think that you, with his thrillers, there are a lot of great thrillers out there that are really driven by action and plot and the edge of your seat kind of stuff, which is great.
Right.
What Andrew does that I really, really love is that he has an additional layer in his writing. He has a real literary fiction piece that's in there. And I was looking over a little preview of his upcoming manuscript, and his writing is really quite breathtaking. He's got a wonderful cadence and rhythm to his prose, and there's a lot of heart and emotion in his characters and in the way that he delivers some very powerful emotion in a few short sentences. He does not overwrite. He knows how to tell a story and then deliver that one line that's the zinger, you know, that makes you go,
right,
and you kind of catch your breath. He's got real heart in there. And I really love, I mean, I happen to be a huge fan of literary fiction, which is not, unfortunately, always the greatest selling genre to be in. So
no.
I particularly love
it. And it's hard
Andrew's.
To find it, too, Jessica, to find really well-written literary fiction.
Yes, and there's some great stuff out there, and it's not really the trend these days. So,
right.
Can be harder to come across because it's not at the top of the charts and stuff. It's hard to fall into. But I love having those pieces of it in, for instance, you know, a book like Andrew's, you know, one of his thrillers, where you've got this great plot and great characters and great setup, but the writing is also of very, very high quality. He doesn't write throwaway thrillers. You know, these are characters.
I understand what you're saying.
It's
not a beach book.
Very, very moving.
This is not a beach book.
Yeah, no, it's not. I mean, I was in tears. I was texting him as I was reading The Lion, the Lamb, the Hunted. There are some scenes between, kind of flashback scenes between the main character, Patrick, and his incidents that happened with his mother that were incredibly painful to read and so well written. And it's a hard thing to pull off where Andrew really lets a scene speak for itself. He doesn't tell you too much. He doesn't overwrite. He doesn't drive a point home. He presents.
Drew, you owe this woman money. Let me tell you. I don't care promised her. Double it. Double it.
I'm sitting here. I'm almost speechless because
he's filling out a PayPal form right now with my money.
I'm writing the check as we speak. But
yeah, it'll be wired to me later today. It's really true though. I think it's
I don't want you to go just yet, but I still want to talk to Andrew. So I'm going to ask you both this question, Jessica. Do you think that Drew writes from logic or intuition?
Well, I think he does what's smart, which is both. His intuition,
okay.
His gut instincts about things are spot on. And
okay, Drew, what do you think?
He does do that, but oh. He balances it. He balances it with research and logic.
Well, I often call myself what they call a pantser, which is I write by the seat of my pants. There's
mm-hmm.
usually two kinds of writers. There's a plotter and a pantser. And I have logic, like Jessica says, I allow the logic to work its way through because I have to, because you have to have logic in there. But I would say that I write from my intuition a little more because those are the things that you feel but don't say. And intuition is where I think a lot of my emotional threads and my arcs come from. It's a lot of times I'll be writing a book and something will just snap into place and I think, where'd that come from? And I realize
it's my
subconscious and my writer's mind that found that. So I think logic has to be there, like Jessica said, because you have to make sense in your stories. But intuition is kind of maybe intuition is what drives the logic, possibly. But I'm a very dependent on emotional intuition for my stories. My stories have a very strong emotional thread in them, even though they're thrillers and even though they're about dark topics.
Well,
there's always
and probably that's why, Jessica, you're telling me that it's literary because there is so much emotion in them. I'm assuming that's where a lot of your feeling about Andrew's writing is that because there's an emotional component to it. And that in itself, I also am listening to what you said about the cadence and the prose and all. Those things are very important to me when I'm reading a book that is not a beach book, that's not, I mean, I read 400 books a year, let's be serious. So I've read every genre there is. But when I want to read something literary, I want to take my time and reread paragraphs and sentences over and over because the words just sound so good coming off my tongue. So I'm assuming that's what you're saying about Drew's book.
Absolutely. And I think it's a real when Andrew says that he, when we're talking about how Andrew can write from his gut instinct and seat of his pants
mm-hmm.
stuff, what's interesting is, you can hear other authors saying, well, no, I don't have an outline. I just sat down and wrote the book and let it flow out of me. Well, that's all fine and good, but the fact of the matter is that that doesn't pan out all the time. Not everyone can sit there and just, free write a book, or even have an outline and write a book and act as though it comes, it all just flowed out of them and they listen to their gut instinct. Unfortunately, not everyone's gut instinct is as good as Andrew's. So he has real skill under his instincts. His instincts come from a very, very smart, educated, thoughtful place, and it pays off.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask you. I think you sound to me, and from reading bits and pieces of your books, you sound as though, and I would label you a very intelligent writer, because it's like you said, Jessica, anybody can write a book, but to have a well-written piece of literature is very special and very unusual. So, Drew, let me ask you this. Is there cultural value in the fiction that you write?
Cultural value?
Yeah.
Not sure I understand.
Do you see fiction as part of the cultural experience? I mean, should fiction books be culturally relevant? I mean, or should they be part of our lexicon? Should psychological thrillers be in our daily lives? Is it part of our culture? Is it important?
I think you're talking about the subject matter of the books, whether they're culturally relevant or whatever.
The style of book, the subject matter, sure.
Yeah. I think cultural comes in at some point, but I don't think it's whatever drives me in my fiction. I handle topics that are, that are culturally controversial, really. I stay away from certain things I don't want to write about because I don't want to encourage dissension from people. I think when you do that, you tend to alienate people at times. So a lot of writers say, they stay off the soapbox when they write stories. They don't preach their beliefs. And I try to keep my beliefs out of my writing. I I think what drives me more than cultural is emotional. You know, what moves me? And I think when I connect with that, when I write, I think the readers might be moved as well when they read them. So culturally, I don't think I've ever really handled anything that's been, you know, as, you know,
relevant in that
culturally
respect.
Relevant,
okay.
Relevant at the time. No, I don't.
Yeah, it's interesting. Jessica, if you were, you know, going to talk about Andrew and his books and everything, would you say that he really enjoys the writing, or that it's a difficult thing for him?
He absolutely enjoys his writing. I love watching. Andrew is one of the authors who I know who I just love talking to about writing. He's so thoughtful about the writing process. And he really enjoys thinking about his characters, why they would do things, what their motivations are, what could happen to them. He's very open to hearing input, to being critical of parts of his writing that he doesn't like. I often think too critical. He'll send me something and I say, Andrew, this is brilliant. Why do you not see how phenomenal you are? He doesn't always get it. But that's also a sign of a good writer, right? You always want to challenge yourself. He loves that. He wants to push himself far. He wants to try new things. He's never going to be a stagnant writer. And he's very driven by his fans, too. He's really writing for his fans, and he wants to push himself and do his best for them as well.
One thing I might want to add is that it's one of the things about my friendship with Jessica that I absolutely treasure is we share everything she said about me is the exact same. It describes her to a T also. We share the
same. You've had this whole freaking thing planned out all week, right?
No, there was no need for this.
I could have just pre-recorded it, let you two kiss each other and go on.
While we have our love fest here. Honestly, the first day I met Jessica, I met her at a special event up in Santa Monica that Amazon was having. And that night we sat and talked for hours about writing. And it was like there was such a strong connection because she got it, you know. And you know, that's what she's talking about, and that's what I'm talking about. You know, there's something about when two writers meet and connect that way, you know, it's a strong love, a special thing.
Have you guys ever thought about co-authoring a book?
We did. We just raised the subject the other day, kind of as a joke. I think we're both pretty mobbed right now with stuff. But I love.
But
I love
is there
the
something
idea.
That if you weren't mobbed, you would consider doing?
I definitely would.
The thing is, Jessica and I write in two different, very different genres. She writes.
Yes, Tucker, you do.
She writes new adult fiction, and I write thrillers. I thought to say we couldn't do something together, and it might even produce something very interesting. But you know, I'm all for working with other authors. I think it's a great experience. I'm in the process of working with Michelle Scott on a thriller called The Killing Ring.
Terrific.
I love that collaborative process, and I would certainly love to work with Jessica. I think
it would have to be the right project for us, but it might be something shorter. I could see us doing a short. You know, kind of novella or something together, but it would be fun. It's funny that we write in very different genres and produce very different kinds of stories, but we have so many similarities in terms of how we think about writing. It was interesting to me. I'm more used to talking to, young adult, new adult authors. So it's been fun to spend so much time talking to Andrew to hear that there are a lot of commonalities just among writing and how you think about books and how you think about producing a story that people will love or characters that people will connect to. The same kinds of thought go into it, whether you're writing new adult fiction or you're writing a thriller.
Yeah, and it's interesting getting to know an author in another genre, because I've mostly surrounded myself with thriller authors, but since I've met Jessica, I had never really read that genre before, and I read Flat Out Love and absolutely fell in love with it because it was amazing. And you know, it was interesting to read to open my eyes to a different subject matter and something so different from what I write. And I think as an author, that was kind of a lesson to me, is to open my horizons more to other styles of writing, other genres of writing. And, you know, young adult, new adult is so completely different from what I write, and yet it was so refreshing for me to read that, you know?
Well, that's wonderful.
And we're both interested in crazy. I mean, Andrew loves loves pathological behavior as much as I do. So we have a similar theme there that we like talking about you know, dysfunction and how certain events in people's lives have affected them and relationships affect them and what the fallout from that is, too. We just, the results of our interest end up being two very different things. But it's something that we share.
I'm obsessed with crazy.
Well, yeah, but there's so much commonality. I'm hearing from you both. Jessica, I can't thank you enough for calling in today. You've given us a real insight, and I hope you'll come back and let us hear from you by yourself and let Andrew be the caller.
To give a little background.
Love to have you come back anytime and talk
about
your book.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you so much, and I hope enjoy your interview with Andrew. Anyone who gets to spend time
I am immensely,
him,
and it's been heightened by you. Thank you so much, Jessica. Have a great afternoon.
Thanks, you too.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye. Oh, that was so nice. That was so nice. So here's what I want to know. Jessica talked a lot about the process. This is the part that fascinates me about every single author that I speak to. Now, every conversation I have with an author is different. We may veer off, you know, and take the long and winding road, or it may be short and sweet, fast and dirty. Who knows? But every single time, I'm always fascinated by the process. So tell me about your writing process. How do you get, first of all, in the frame of mind to sit down and read? I mean, to write. Are you dedicating certain blocks of time in your day? Do you write when it strikes you? Do you have a place that you go to write, a favorite chair? I mean, I have a picture of you sprawled out on a chair with your laptop, and there's empty food bowls and everything else sitting next to a table and everything. I'm assuming that's a reading thing, or maybe your social media center.
That's actually where I do all my writing. It's my office, but I call it the writing cave. And
is it really?
That's where I.
So tell me about. Let's talk about your process. Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's two parts to my process. There's the physical process, and then there's the not physical process.
Right.
The not physical process is a little more difficult to describe. The physical process is very simple to describe. I write pretty much all day and all evening, and I don't stop. It happens pretty much unless I'm sick or, you know, something prevents me. It's consistently every single day. And like I said, it doesn't feel like work to me. I'm like drawn to it every day. No matter how tired I was the night before, I wake up and it's like I reset, I reset again and I'm ready to go.
Wow.
But that's how it is when you love.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Because I have a question pertaining to that.
Okay. And then the physical.
Go
ahead. Go ahead now.
Yes. Now, I wanted to ask you, do you have all kinds of stuff running around in your head all the time, and you think, I got to get this down on paper, and is it always about what you're writing, or is there oftentimes, is it set aside because you want to save that for something else?
That falls into what I was going to talk to you next, which is the non-physical process, which is actually very difficult to describe because I think most of it comes from my subconscious mind. I think for me, what I've learned, and I have a mentor, his name is Kelly Eskridge, who's very, very brilliant, and one of the things she has always told me is, Drew, trust the process, is what she's always said.
Right.
And I never really quite understood what that meant. I never could really get my mind around it. But what I discovered is that I have to understand that my process tends to be a little, like I talked about before, it's a very kind of erratic kind of, you know, things fly around in my head and I can't grasp them and I can't find them and I can't put my finger on them. And what I have to understand is that's part of my process. And it used to make me kind of crazy and get me all worked up because I was like, things are so confusing right now and nothing's making sense and nothing's fitting together. And what I've come to realize is eventually all those things eventually find a place to land in my head. And I have to trust that that's going to happen. I have to trust those things will occur. And what usually occurs is when I'm not thinking about it, when I'm doing something else, when I'm in the shower, when I'm driving my car, or when I'm cutting vegetables or whatever I'm doing, that's when the ideas hit. That's when everything connects and I get that wow moment, because that's the process of the subconscious mind's process is very, you can't, it's like the muse, the writing muse. You cannot make the muse
right.
come. This comes when it needs to. So I've learned
it just flows when it flows.
Right.
Yeah.
So I've learned to trust that if I'm stuck in an area of my book that I can't make sense with, I have to trust that it will come, and it always does. So you have to kind of, I've learned to trust the process, as crazy and erratic and you know, illogical as it seems. I have to understand that my mind is always working, and I'll be doing something completely not writing related, and I'll have that wow moment where, boom, it comes. And that's, and then I know that you know, and the more that happens, the more I realize, you know, that confusion is actually part of my process.
So do you document what's in your head? How do you keep it there? Listen, I'm a great one for list making, only because I've learned at my ripe old age that there's no way I'm going to remember everything that floats through my head, regardless of its significance. So when you have what you think is an idea, a thought, a phrase, a character, a location, whatever it happens to be, do you write it down? Do you record it? Or does it stay with you, Drew?
Well, I'm probably the most disorganized person that's ever walked this earth.
Okay.
Anyone who's walked into my house can see that. You know, it's just, I'm very, I have a very difficult time with attention and keeping things straight and keeping things together. So a lot of times I know that if something hits me, no matter where I am, the other night I was in bed trying to fall asleep, and lo and behold, the idea hit me. I wasn't even thinking about it. It just came. And I knew I had to get out of bed, find something to write on, and get it down, because I would forget it by the next day. So
right.
I try. iPhones are wonderful for that, too, because of the memo feature. But
right.
I always have my phone with me, so I can always do that. But I try as best I can. If I know I have something that's going to be crucial to the book, or even just a random thought about a future book, you know, I don't use everything I think
right.
of. I try to write it down because I know the way I am, I could forget it. Now, that's not to say that when I sit down to write again, subconsciously it might surface again, because it has to. But for the most part,
right.
I do try very hard to document whatever I think is important, because it's driving me.
Now, do you ever end up throwing out any of those thoughts, those random thoughts?
No.
Do you ever go back and look at it and say, don't know where this came from, maybe bad sausage or something, but this isn't going to work?
Bad chocolate. No, or cheap chocolate.
Or lack of chocolate, right?
Or lack of chocolate, yeah. No, when those happen, I usually file those away. I have a file on my desktop with ideas that I've tossed aside, because I know it's possible I might use those in the future. So I try to keep those scraps, I try to keep them handy in case I might need them in the future. I don't know if I have, you know, I always do, but if it's something that's just, some of those become books, actually, by the way. Some of those little random snippets
right.
end up becoming novels.
Right.
Because really,
right.
all my novels start the same way. Every novel I write starts with what if. And that what if is simply a sentence a lot of times. And from there, that sentence becomes a concept, and it grows, and the layers get thrown on. And before I know it, there's a whole novel surrounding them. So, you know, it's I think anyone who writes a novel probably starts with that premise, or some premise of, you know, what if. And
so
some of those what ifs
will
just
end up. How do you actually get started, though? What do you do to sit down and say, today I'm starting my new book?
Well, that's what I'm doing right now. I'm in the process of
really?
Doing it. And, you know, I talk about how exciting it is to open a blank page and start a new world. But what I'm discovering as I improve in my craft is that it's actually getting harder for me, because there's so much that I know now, and that almost makes things a little more complicated for me, because, you know, there's a lot of interference going on in my mind. So when I started this new novel, I think I spent about, now I don't outline, so because I'm a pantser, I don't outline, and I don't structure my novels. I just simply start writing. And with this book, I spent a little time. I usually spend at least a few months thinking about it. I don't necessarily outline, but I think about it. And then the subconscious starts landing in my mind. And when I feel like I have enough to go on, usually I have a beginning and an ending, and I have to fill in everything in between. And that's the hard part, because I know how it starts. I know
the hook
at the end. And then filling in the blanks between is the process that I struggle with the most. It's how to make the story complete. And that's the middle part, you know. So I'm probably about 15,000 words into my next novel. And
wow.
I just, what you have to understand if you're a writer is that you just have to just keep writing through it and let it flow. You can always go back and make changes and fix and do things, but the hardest part is just getting started, you know. And for me, that was
I have
that
heard
was, that
other
was,
authors tell me that they, that
yeah.
some of them say, I know what the end of this book is going to be. And they write mm-hmm. the ending, and then as long as that's down, they can go back to it later on. And
yeah,
so
I don't write the ending so right away. But I have the ending in my mind. I know what it is. I'm very clear. I may even write like a few notes on what the ending is, but I don't write it until the end because there's so much that has to happen before that to connect it
before,
all.
Right.
So the ending. Kind of by the time I'm toward the other book, I'm like, I can't wait to write this ending because I know, you know, how exactly what I'm going to do, what I'm going to think. I don't think I've had that insight so early on. But everyone works
That's
differently.
That's interesting.
Everyone has their own process.
Yeah, yes, they do. It's fascinating. Again, like I tell you, I ask this question of every single person that I speak with because it's so fascinating the different ways that writers approach their work. So are you surprised where your characters take you?
That's also funny you ask me that question because I say it a lot, and people think I'm crazy, but I always tell people I don't write my books, my characters do. I'm just the conduit.
Right.
They talk. And people think it's not like I have crazy voices. Well, I do have crazy voices in my head, but they're usually mine.
All writers
but,
have crazy voices in their head, especially if you're
awesome.
Doing thrillers.
But I think that the point of my books are very character-driven. And when I say character-driven, I mean the story is centered around the characters. They are what drive the plot. It's not a plot, it's
right.
a character. It's
plot
a character
driven.
With a plot.
I understand.
And,
right.
and the characters, you know, when I know I'm in the zone when my characters are literally talking to me and telling me what I need to do next. It's like with Patrick, who is probably my most beloved character I've ever written, I had such a strong emotional connection to him because he was so deeply layered and so he was so, you know, I'd never had a connection to him before. And that was probably the one experience I had where Patrick wrote those books. You know, he told the story. And I would write something and say, Patrick would never say that. He would never do that, you know, or Patrick... Patrick doesn't react this way. And that's what I mean when I say the characters are telling the stories. And I think for any writer who writes character-driven stories, that is the true success that comes from really connecting with your characters because that's what the readers care the most about are your characters. And
now,
I think when
Drew,
I feel it,
you,
the readers feel it.
Do you have a picture of Patrick in your mind? Do you know how he walks and what he looks like? So
no, he really doesn't.
There's no
you know
physicality
why?
With him. There's only
no, because
his intellect, his emotion.
I thought about that a lot. I thought to myself, what does Patrick look like? I wrote the second book, which was Darkness and Shadows, which is a sequel to the first book. And by then I felt like I knew him so well. And I thought about it. I thought, you know something? I don't even have an idea what Patrick looks like. And I think the reason I don't have an idea what Patrick looked like is because I'm writing Patrick from an emotional point of view. I'm almost I'm in his head. I'm looking at the world through his eyes. I think looking at him from the outside in would be not connecting with the character, but looking through his eyes, I'm looking at the world through his perspective, so I don't have any idea. It's like I'm running from my own perspective. I don't see my face. I see the world. So I think
I understand.
The fact that I write from inside his head, I don't have any idea what he looks like.
Now, which begs the question: if your book was ever optioned for a movie, who would play Patrick, the character of Patrick? You've never given
really
that
be,
any thought.
You know, it could really be anybody. I would be more concerned with whether he connects with the emotional theme that is Patrick, where that he relate that he relates in the way Patrick is more than I don't focus on the physical because I think as long it could be anybody as long as he portrays Patrick's point of view from the emotional importance of his character. I think so.
Brilliant, brilliant. I'm so fascinated. I want our listeners first to get a sense of how they can reach you. You are a social media bug. I know that. You're very, very fan-friendly, and that's a wonderful thing. So first of all, tell us what about your webpage, where we can find you.
My webpage is www.andrewekaufman.com. Don't forget the E in there.
It's a very nice webpage, too. It's lovely.
Thank you. Thank you. And, of course, I'm on Facebook and always happy to make new friends there. So if you look me up, feel free to throw me a friend request. I'm always happy to meet new people there. And that's mostly where I do most of my pretty much, you know, a good part of my social outreach. It's a great place to you know, talk to everyone. So that's, you know, I have a blog.
You to mention, yeah, your blogs and also Crime Fiction Collective, which I don't think a lot of people who are outside the industry know about. It is a beautiful, beautiful thing to behold when you read crime fiction. There's not a blog goes by that I don't learn something from it. And I'm not even a writer. So, you know, and I fully admit that. I just adore writers. I'm so in awe of writers that, you know. Tell us about your blog first.
Well, Crime Fiction Collective actually became reality at Left Coast Crime in Santa Fe, New Mexico. There were a few of us who met, became fast friends there. It was, I think it was originally L.J. Sellers, who's a big best-selling author with Thomas and Mercer.
She's coming on my show.
Yeah, Peg Brantley, who's a very up-and-coming author. And Jody Renner, who's an editor. She's an editor.
Yeah, Jody's going to come on, too. Yeah.
Yeah. And and Marilyn Beebe, who's a book reviewer. And we all kind of just became friends very quickly, very fast, which is one of those things snap into place. And we spent the whole weekend just talking and enjoying, you know, talking about our craft and our writing. And at the end, toward the end, we said, why don't we write a blog together? And, you know, I had never done a collective blog like that. And it was a great idea. And 2 years later, we're still going at it. And we all just kind of throw our individual interesting perspectives into things. You know, LJ writes, you know, about her experiences. Peg writes about, initially Peg's experience was when she was trying to make the first step into being an author, putting her work out there. So a lot of that was her struggle. Marilyn writes book reviews. Jody writes about,
the editing,
on writing and editing. And we all just, and since then we've mushroomed. There's quite a few other people on there who joined us.
Right, I know Tom Schreck writes with you too, doesn't he?
Gail and we just recently added Teresa Burrell and Jen Hilborn. I'm trying to think if I remember everybody because we've gotten kind of big now. We have quite a few, but just a great group of people with interesting perspectives. And for my posts, anything goes. I write mostly about my running experiences from a personal standpoint, and it can be anything from, you know, how I drive myself crazy when I'm running stories to my favorite book when I was a kid to, you know, it just goes all over the place. And I really enjoy it.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Is there anybody you want to give a shout out to? While we're at this point? I'm sorry?
All my amazing, wonderful readers is who I want to reach out to because I'm so grateful to them. And that's every chance I get to reach out to them, I do because they mean so much to me.
Oh, good. I'm so glad to hear that. I don't know if you're familiar with the show or not, but I always at the end of this do kind of a little homage to Inside the Actors Studio in their Maurice Pivot questionnaire. So you are now entering the Authors on the Air questionnaire stage. Feel free to answer as you wish. Okay. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
So Jessica's writing a book about you. What's she going to call it?
Oh, gosh. I don't even know. My Love Affair with Turtle.
Okay, there you go. That works for me.
And then there was Andrew.
Okay. I like it. Give me one thing that's inside your writer's toolbox.
The most important thing I'd say is my intuition.
Okay. Yeah, it sure is, isn't it? It's worked well for you.
Yeah.
You, and I'm asking this for a reason, because you said you just recently stepped outside your comfort zone when you were reading. If we looked on your nightstand, what book would we find there?
Well, you would find a Kindle with about 1,000 books on them, many of which I haven't read yet. And then you'd find a stack of about 7 or 8 other books that I happen to have, which were probably given to me. Mostly you'll see thrillers. You'll see thrillers, psychological thrillers, dark stories. I'm obsessed with dark stories and the dark aspects of life.
One of our previous guests writes that same way. He's a Bram Stoker Award winner, Kaelin Patrick Burke. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he writes some really incredible stuff and is an award-winning writer, too.
I love
you know Kaelin. He's really great.
Yeah, I seek out the darkest stories. I really find those just fascinating. So,
yeah, but you gotta try the vampire love stuff too, honey. You know,
I never got into
vampires. But you know, you gotta try it for a laugh. Okay, that's just my personal pushing you in there. All right, what do you do when you're not writing?
All I do is write. I have no life outside of writing. I'm a little unbalanced that way. I'm working on that. But I spend time with my dogs. I love photography. I love to read, which is kind of like writing, but not quite the same. And I enjoy my friendships. And I do a lot of social media. So, you know.
That's perfect. You said you had horses, too? You have horses
yes,
also, Drew, you mentioned? Okay.
Yeah, I do.
What's your favorite word that you use over and over in every book, no matter what? What word do you always use because you love the sound of it?
Oh, gosh, I don't even know. I know I have to go through my manuscript several times and weed out the words that I overuse a lot. And some of those words, one of the words that I think I even did a Facebook post about it, is the word suddenly. Suddenly and eventually are words that I can't stop peppering my manuscripts with. And I literally have to do a word search on the final draft and pull those out and replace them with something else, because for some reason that word comes to my head all the time suddenly. And it's like, it's kind of redundant, because everything pretty much happens suddenly, not much happens gradually. So when I have suddenly, usually I can just yank it out and not even lose a thing. It's one of those words I throw in there a lot, and eventually, you know, those two words, but there are a lot of other
I remember seeing a Facebook post about something like that, and I remember Jay Carson Black was putting in her things, and then I put together all those words that everybody said they use too much, and I made a sentence out of them. It was really funny. So I know that there are some words that writers just love to use. I have one last question for you, and I'm not going to take up any more time. You've been a fascinating guest today. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
When were you comfortable enough to call yourself author?
I think I wasn't really comfortable calling myself an author when I published, I guess I started calling myself an author, but I don't know if I ever really felt like I was one until I started getting readers. I don't think, I say this all the time, but without my readers, an author is not necessarily, not to say that you can't be an author without readers, but to me, the readers are such an important component of my career that when I started finding readers, I felt like an author. That's not to say I was never one before, but I felt like one. You know, when people start reading.
You were always a writer, but you felt like an author when you had your readers, correct?
Yeah, and that's not to say people aren't authors who don't have readers yet. It's just that I don't think I felt completely able to call myself that until I connected with readers, and that some way that completed the process, because it's such a big, important part of this world I'm in now.
Yeah. I have to say, this has been one of the most enjoyable chats I've had with an author.
Oh, thank you.
And I cannot thank you enough for being so honest and upfront about everything that's going on in your life and about your process and your wonderful friend Jessica Park, who I urge our listeners to go and get her books too, because she really is quite hysterical. I wish you and Turtle and the rest of your menagerie a lovely day. And please come back and see us sometime, Drew. You're just a really cool guy. I love talking to you. Okay, and thanks again. Thank you. And listeners, this weekend I want you to curl up with a good book. Make it one of Andrew E. Kaufman's books. I don't care if you say you don't like thrillers. You're going to love his books. I know, because I'm scared to death of psychological thrillers, and I've read them. They're excellent. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for being with us. Tomorrow we have a special broadcast with author Raymond Benson. We're going to be talking about his Black Stiletto series, an incredible body of work. Thank you, everybody. Have a great day. Drew, thanks again.
Thank you.